Good evening. My name is David Russell, and you know, I'm just going to cut to the chase, okay? You all need to know how cool I am. Seriously. I mean, come on. Look at me. I'll give you a second. Come on. What's that up here? And the next question naturally would be, has he always been that cool? Yes. Yes, I have. Yes, I have. Well, there, except for this one time where, you know, I was going for a high top fade, if you can imagine that right now. And it, what it turned into was something that was almost a Jerry curl. Almost a Jerry curl. And then not quite an afro. But other than that, what you see is what you get. See, all growing up, I've always been one of those guys, you know, one of the smart ones, one of the star athletes, the popular ones. And I even won best dancer in my senior class. I won't do that right now, though. But, you know, and I always had a way with the ladies. I mean, come on. So it would make sense that I grew up in Metropolis. Metropolis, Illinois, the home of Superman. The place where this superhero is celebrated. And with that comes an obligation to really uphold your image. And, you know, while I'm not the real Superman, I did have a source of kryptonite. And that kryptonite knew a secret about me that I wanted to keep locked away from everybody. And if that secret got out, it would immediately drain me of any power and influence that I had. It would change my image from that of a towering power of strength and courage into a weak and defeated bowl of mush. And this little source of kryptonite was about 10 years younger than me and took the form of my little sister. You see, when she came around, I don't know what it was about her, but there was like a cloud that followed her. You know, and it felt like a virus was eating away at my stomach. You know, was she coming? What was she going to say? How long was she going to be there? And that fear that I had, that I kept attached to my back like a backpack, it just dictated, you know, what friends came to the house, how long they stayed, and who I exposed them to when they got there. And this secret should have been something that that should have kept me up at night, you know, worrying about what would people think when they found out about this. You know, what would happen when my little sister told my friends, or worse yet, even my girlfriend? You know, how would it go down? It wasn't even a question of if, it was when. And I was going to deny it. Would she be sitting off to the side of the room, playing with the little Cabbage Patch dolls, looking all cute and innocent? Then all of a sudden her head would spin around and she would say, David peed the bed till he was 13. Man. That is not cool. That is not cool. And I probably just killed your image of Superman right now. But, you know, I didn't know how to get through that other than getting rid of her. And that wasn't even an option. But, you know, I kind of feel kind of lighter right now. You know, I've now told several hundred of my closest friends here, you know, and that kryptonite that once held me captive is powerless against me now. Man, I like that. I should have done this a long time ago. And I know that for some of us, it's the first time we've ever met. But I do want to thank you for this free therapy and thank you for making this a safe place for me. I really appreciate that. I'm getting kind of teary-eyed, but let's just pray. Let's pray. Father, I just thank you for your gift. I thank you for how you move in each of our lives. And I just pray, God, that you would make my words clear and help one person to be receptive to what it is and how you've moved in my life. It's in your son's name. Amen. Today, as a part of this series, you know, virus, the hidden infection of our lives, we're going to talk about fear. So why fear? Well, fear is something that people often, they try to hide from other folks, you know. Then you've got some people who think that they're immune to that virus, who think that it doesn't affect them. You know, they might roll around with, you know, no fear on their T-shirt or ain't scared on their car or something like that. And then you've got some people who openly acknowledge their fear. You know, some of you might have a big meeting this week or a job interview or, you know, the thought of you going back to work on Monday morning and meeting that person just really turns your stomach, you know. And then you have that unspoken fear, the things that you don't really want to talk about, that you don't really want to share, Whether it's, you know, you might be afraid of the dark. You might not like scary movies, or you too might have had a problem controlling your bladder in an early age in life. Something like that. It could be anything. And sometimes we're faced, it takes us to be faced with that fear head on for us to really actually experience and understand what it's all about. And then you have those of us who are constantly wrestling with our fear, but still don't know how to overcome it. And I saw how fear can really move in someone's life here recently. My wife and I and our son, we went to Florida for vacation a few weeks back. And for my son, it was his first time going to the beach. And my wife, she loves the beach. You know, she loves the beach, but her favorite movie is Jaws, and I don't understand that. But, you know, we were there. We were psyched. We were ready to go. And, you know, had the sunscreen, the sunblock on. We were all packed up, had our load with us, walked down the steps, and there it was, the beach. Sugar white sand, blue green water, the backdrop of the baby blue sky, the waves crashing in. And next thing I know, I look over, my wife, she's dropped all of her gear, and she's running. She's running down the beach. Man, it's like Baywatch. Only better. Well, not that I've ever seen Baywatch, but someone had told me about it. But she was gone. You know, she ran down the beach, jumped in the water. She was swimming out. Now, let's keep in mind that she just had LASIK surgery a few months back. So a new set of eyes, hadn't been underneath the water in 10 years. You know, had a bad case of corneal lesions. Man, it wasn't pretty. But she was ready. So she's out there swimming underwater. She's gone. I don't see her. That was a beautiful sight. So here I am. I drop my stuff and I get my son set up. And 2 minutes later, she's back behind me. And I'm like, what are you doing? This buildup of coming down to Florida, getting underwater, going to the beach. And you're back already? Try your new eyes out. And she said, I thought a shark might get me. See, I mean, that's the power that fear can have over you. And I don't know whether to crack on her or to, you know, really encourage her. But that's the power that fear can have over you. It can change the emotions in a minute. Now, and so, kind of similar to this, for the past, you know, 12 months in my life, I've been in a knockdown, dragout fight with this fear virus. Some of you might remember last summer we were in a series called Fear Factor, and there was one particular service that really started to unmask my fears. And it was the service where we were all given a glass ball. Some of you might remember that. And we were asked to write down all the things in that ball that we needed to die to. Let me back up for a second. Dying, as it was described that day, was the process of you identifying what are some of the things that are central in your life that have some sort of control over you that you need to release. So it could be, you know, money, cars, family, anything, you know. If something happened to this thing, I don't know what I would do. And so you take that and you replace that with a relationship with God. And I can remember this like it was yesterday. You know, I had my ball in my hand and my little Sharpie, and I wrote down 6 things. You know, pride, my job, my family, money, fear, and myself. And I walked that ball up to the stage like you just saw, and it was like a hot potato in my hand. You know, walked it up and threw it down in the coffin like many of us in here did to signify that I was wanting to die to those things that I had on that ball. And at the time, I didn't really understand what it all meant to do that. I was just glad that it was all over with. But I do remember saying that, you know, asking God, you know, God, I really, really want to die to these things. You know, I want to get in the passenger seat and let you drive. And ironically, this was the same time that I was being faced with a career opportunity. I'm employed by a major clothing retailer, hence the coolness. And at the time, I was one of our division's training and development managers. And this opportunity, as it was presented to me, it seemed like gold. you know, really hit my sweet spot. It was a chance for me to go and, you know, build a department from the ground up, to go and create some new processes and just really put the pieces together and move things forward. I was finally getting the knowledge for my skills, you know, and it was a great feeling. But there was a catch. And that catch for me was I had to move my family down to Nashville in order to make this happen. So let me give you a quick snapshot of my family to kind of frame this up. My wife, Kelly, been married for 7 years, and we have our son, Mac, who is about a year and a half now. And my wife, she had recently left her job as a high school teacher to stay home with our son, Mac, and raise him. She had also recently just started a new serving opportunity here at Crossroads, and that really hit her sweet spot, and so she was excited about that. We've also been in the same A-team or small group for the past 3 years and had a pretty solid base of friends that we were with. We were in our first house, and we're really feeling like Cincinnati was our home. Now, my son, obviously, he could care less about moving. The worst case for him, he grew up to be a Vols fan or a Titans fan. But my wife, on the other hand, and that was a different story. You see, she had no desire to move to Nashville. It's too far south. And she liked where she was, thank you very much, and she made no bones about it. She's kind of quiet like that. But, you know, what about the plans that she had? You know, I said she was a teacher. She had to go back and, you know, work on her master's. What about the role that she was in here at Crossroads serving? You know, what about that? What about all the friends, you know, that we had and she wanted to continue to build relationships with? You know, what about the annual New Year's Eve Russell extravaganza that we always had? What about that? You know? So obviously she was a willing participant in all of this. And, but surely I thought she'd come around because she's got to stand by her man. You know, she's got to support me because after all, I am the man and I am the breadwinner. Yeah, and that's about how well that went over when I said it, too. See, at the time, I really had not taken the time to really figure out why was it that I was willing to turn our worlds upside down. And through this whole decision-making process, something for me just didn't seem, it didn't add up. It didn't feel right. It didn't sound right. And I really had to dig through that to figure out what it was that was driving my decision. And ultimately, what I found is that it was fear. And, you know, what I found in God's wisdom was my fear and how to work through it. And today I'm going to share with you three antidotes that God has taught me in my experience in how to face fear. So the first antidote is wisdom. In the book of Proverbs, it's chock full of great information that can help you in your day-to-day life. So we're going to take a look at a particular passage in the book of Proverbs, Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. See, I struggle with this because I thought that my understanding was God's understanding. You know, sometimes we might think that, you know, God is just a bigger version of us, you know, and that's where I was at that time. And as a male, fellas, help me out here. I needed to provide for my family. That's what I was supposed to do. That's what I'd always been taught. You know, success for me would be swollen pockets and a little bit of notoriety. You know, because I was chasing the dollar sign. You know, for me, it was all about the Benjamins. You know, but yet in the back of my head, all I kept hearing was more money, more problems. And I didn't realize how much these things really impacted my life and how much they drove me. And some of you might be thinking, new job, more money. Company relocating you, man, quit crying. Poor baby. But see, for me, I have been praying to God that he would increase my salary and provide me with new opportunities. And so, you know, it all seemed great. It went straight to my ego. And plus the fact that I had, you know, my boss and other key male influential figures that I work with, we'll call them Bruce, Steve, and Vince. And they were saying things like, you were the only one who can fix this. This job is perfect for you. If you do this and you do it well, which you will, you can write your ticket in this company. We'll take care of you. Man, of course God wanted that for me. I know in talking to my mom, she wanted it for me. You know, she was like, baby, this is a blessing. Baby, this is an answered prayer. And to rationalize this, I would tell myself and my wife, you know, there is nothing keeping me here. And I can remember, you know, going home after a Saturday night service and doing a debrief about the service, sitting on our front porch swing. And I would say things like, you know, my friends here, I don't have any friends here. My friends here aren't like my college friends. My college friends who loved and revered me so much that they called me Big Dookie. You know, no one here at Crossroads calls me Big Dookie. I don't walk in the building and all of a sudden I hear someone saying, "What's up, Duke?" That didn't happen. There was also a chance that, you know, my job would end anyway and it would be moved. And so this was a chance for me to take control of the situation, a chance for me to get a fresh start. And I also used the one, we can always come back. So I was convinced I was right, right? But it seemed like during the summer, each series, it was speaking directly to me. And I can remember sitting back in my normal seat on Saturday nights and just tears just flowing and me not really understanding why. But what I kept hearing was, you know, don't be afraid. I've got your back. I even took a day off of work and spent some quiet time with God, just going to Sawyer Point and with my little notepad and just asking some questions. You know, what's your plan for us? Where does all this doubt come from? And how can I get rid of it? And I remember hearing things like, you know what? I'll provide for you. Just be patient and persevere. You're being taken out of your comfort zone because you're letting other things distract you. And I need your full attention. And just trust in me. So what if my understanding, again, didn't match God's understanding? So I want to take a look back at the verse that we looked at earlier here and kind of dissect that a little bit. You know, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Of course, I trust in the Lord, but with all my heart, with all my being, with all of my essence, that's a hard one. That was a hard one for me, you know, because I like to play the what if game. Anyone else like to play the what if game? You know, what if I don't make the right decision? What if I never get an opportunity like this again? What if I don't do this and I'm supposed to do this? Then what happens? Lean not on your own understanding. I understood things only as far as I could see them, and that wasn't very far. And in all your ways, acknowledge him. I acknowledged him. I acknowledged the fact that if something didn't go right, it was all his fault, and, you know, I'm clear of it. And this passage is saying, if you do these first three things, then the result is he will make your path straight. And because I didn't do those first three things, he decided to take me on the scenic route, okay? And so I was formally offered the job, and I'd heard that anytime you make a big decision like this, you're supposed to feel great, supposed to be the most exciting time of your life, you know? But I felt like I had lost my best friend. Have any of you ever faced a situation that you tried to rationalize in your head, but it still didn't make sense? No matter how much you thought about it and tried to work it out, the piece of the puzzle just didn't seem to fit together. So what's the use of having all this wisdom and letting it sit by and do nothing? So you got to understand there's a difference between knowledge and wisdom. You know, you're not wise if you know the right thing. You're wise if you do the right thing. And there's wisdom in doing, but it's in the doing that takes a little bit something extra. And that's where we come to the second antidote, and that's courage. So when you hear courage, what do you think of? What's the first image that comes in your mind? Maybe Cowardly Lion, Wizard of Oz, seeking courage, you know? You know, what is a lion? A lion is the king of the jungle. A lion is Mufasa. Everything the light touches is yours, Simba. Who in the jungle has the most to lose when they admit a flaw but the lion? And I had heard that, you know, someone said that being courageous is not being scared. Well, for me, I just think that person was scared to admit that they were scared because, you know, courage is being scared and still doing the right thing. So if you look in the New Testament, in the book of 2 Timothy, Paul, who's one of the early leaders of the church, was writing a letter to one of his students, Timothy. And he says, you know, God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline. And what this passage is saying is that if your fear is leading you to not do the right thing, it's not a fear of God. So what is it that you're afraid of? See, when I accepted that job offer, I also found out in that same conversation that my old job had been eliminated. So I'm on the phone. Hey, congratulations. I'm accepting the position. Oh, by the way, your old job just, you know, it's been eliminated. Didn't they tell you? You know, so already I'm not feeling good about the decision. And then now I have nothing else to go back to. So I'm stuck. I'm like, man, I got to move. And it was during this period that I was traveling 4 days a week, coming back on Friday morning, having breakfast with my men's A team. And we were reading the book at the time, Purpose Driven Life by Rick Warren. Some of you might have read this book. But let me tell you, this book can change your life. You know, my wife, in her infinite wisdom, she kept encouraging me to, you know, you need to read this book. But at the same time, she would say, don't read that book. And it was like she knew something was in there for me. And I had no idea what she was talking about. But it didn't take me long to figure it out. So I'm less than a week into it. And I come to this spot on day three where the question is asked. It says, what would your family and friends say is the driving force in your life? And what is it that you want it to be? See, I've been so passionate about saying that Christ was the center of my life. I tell any and everyone, regardless of where we were. And I honestly felt that at the end of the day, that's how my life was structured. But come to find out that wasn't how it was at all. I wasn't living that way. And I just felt like I was a walking contradiction. I was living my life like my career was number one and everything else was secondary. So it hit me. I've been asking God through this whole time, you know, God, why is this happening? What do you want me to do? What does this mean? And as I was driving back into work at about midnight one night, I asked the question. I said, you know, God, what are you trying to teach me? And he said, you need to die to your job. My job? My job, the job that pays the bills, the job that has allowed this small town guy to experience things that he never thought that he would experience, that's allowed me to travel to foreign countries, the job that literally and figuratively puts clothes on me and my family's back, my job. And he's like, yes, your job, the job that you have your image all wrapped up in, the job that I gave you, the job that I've allowed you to grow in. Yes, that job. And I began to ask myself, if my heart wasn't in it, then why was it so hard for me to say no? And to figure this out, I had to go way back in the time machine. And I find it funny that things that happen to us as adults or happen as you get older, you can trace those events back to things that happened in your childhood. At least I can. And for me, I had to really better understand the strained relationship that I have with my father. Now, Dad, if you're out there, I love you. So just know that before I say this. You see, my dad, he lost his dad at an early age. And so, you know, thinking about this, he might not have been very equipped or really knew how to be a father. And so at age two, he and my mother divorced. He moved away to Minnesota and rarely saw him. So at the age of 10, he and my mom decided to remarry. And at the age of 17, they decided to divorce again. So had so much fun the first time, they had to do it again, I guess. But this, you know, being a product of twice divorced parents, you know, it left me asking some questions of myself. You know, what did I do? Was this my fault? Maybe I wasn't good enough. You know, why would my father leave? You know, I've got a son of my own right now, and so I understand what it's like to have your child put a smile on your face. And they put a smile on your voice when you light up when you just think about them. And so why, if that's the case, why would my dad leave? And I'd always wanted to gain his approval. I always wanted him to be proud of me. And so I guess this idea stayed with me for a while, for a long time. And, you know, given the fact that my boss and all my key influential figures at work were males, you know, this opportunity that I was faced with was a time for me to finally gain some approval and acceptance from men. And I never, ever would have thought that. I never would have put that together. And it hit me in my, it just felt like a ton of bricks had fallen on me. That's what was driving me. I also read a book by Dr. James Dobson, Bringing Up Boys, and he makes a comment. He says, when a father is uninvolved, it creates an ache and a longing that will linger for decades. And my heart ached for that approval. And so that gap that I had of time spent with my father created a gap in me and in my heart that I was trying to fill. And I didn't really at the time know it. And I was trying to fill that gap with my job. See, I'd always told myself growing up, you know what? I'm not going to be like him. I'm not going to do that to my family. When I have a son, oh my gosh, he will get so much love and attention from me. I don't ever want him to feel that way. I'm always going to be there for my family. I'm always going to provide for my family, protect them from everything. And the idea of not being able to provide for my family, that's the fear that fueled my life. And I was being presented with a series of tests, which up until this point have focused on the first two antidotes that we talked about, wisdom and courage. You know, was I really ready to lean on God in this situation? And based on what he said, was I going to listen? So after having a conversation with some friends of mine here at Crossroads and really digging into this situation, understanding some of the learnings and some of the struggles, I knew what I had to do. I didn't want to do it. I was scared to do it. But I knew that if I didn't go through with it, then I wasn't really dying to my job. So again, we've got the first antidote is wisdom. The second is courage, which leads us to the third one, which I had to do to rid myself of this particular string of the virus, and that's trust. See, in the book of Hebrews in the New Testament, it's pretty clear. It says, you know, God said that never will I leave you and never will I forsake you. And sometimes it doesn't feel that way. Sometimes this is hard for us to get our hands around that this statement is true. You know, what if? What if God oversleeps? You know, what if he forgets? What if he didn't bring his A game? You know, then what happens? And for me, dying to my job meant that I had to give it back. I had to tell each of those males that I worked with that my relationship with Jesus Christ was more important than this job they were offering me, even when they offered me more. I had to tell my parents that, you know, we're not going to move 3 hours closer to you. And all this talk about me having Christ at the center of my life, I finally had to put my Jesus where my heart was. And even after I had announced this, my rationale was questioned. People still said, what? What do you mean? You know, what's it going to take to change your mind? And they didn't understand. See, I'd put my job on the table and I was prepared to walk. Remember I said that God took me on the scenic route, right? And so he kept me in that job for another 3 months. Already making the statement that, you know, I'm out of here. I'm a lame duck. I'm a dead man walking. And so 3 months passes and they say, you know, they tell me, they say, you know what, you'll stay in this role until you find another job or we replace you. Whichever comes first. Okay? So 3 months passes and I'm getting kind of antsy, you know. I have no leads. And I'm like, okay, God, remember me? I'm faithful, you know, throw me a bone, give me something. And it wasn't until there was a Friday in January where things started to open up. You know, I finally got a lead, got an interview. The interview and the job seemed like a formality. It was cake. Left there without a doubt in my mind, this was mine. It was just a question of them making the offer. Feeling good. So I drive home, and on my way home, I start to get angry. And I'm asking God, I'm saying, God, why is this the only opportunity that you've put in front of me? Why is this the only lead that I have? Haven't I been faithful to you? So next thing I know, my phone rings, and it's my old boss. And he says, hey, David, this new job just opened up, and your name came up, and do you want it? You don't have to move. Yeah, that was a quick conversation. And, you know, with the weekend to kind of think and pray about it, you know, I hop back on a plane on Monday morning and I tell you, I just felt defeated. I'm sitting on the plane and I remember just pleading with God. I'm like, God, please change my situation. So I'm driving into work that morning and, you know, I'm just overcome with despair. Because I'm driving and I start to cry, and then that cry turns into a sob, and that sob turns into one of those things where you need to, and I had to pull off to the side of the road because, I mean, I couldn't see. I couldn't function. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, I was broken. Because at that point in time, I needed to feel God's presence right there next to me. I needed to feel him. I needed to touch him. It had to be tangible. Because I was ready to go home. I was ready to turn around and go home. Because I couldn't make it another hour. I couldn't make another day. I couldn't make another second without him there. So later on that day, I was offered the job. Accepted it. And 2 weeks later, I'm back home. In a new position. My situation had changed. Friends, we're not designed to live life alone. Because if it were up to me and me only, I'd be in Tennessee right now. Because it would have been much easier to move. And then when you get down there, all of a sudden had this awakening that was like, oh, you mean God, you didn't want us to move? Oh, okay. I'll do better next time. Hey, Kelly, guess what? God didn't want us to move after all. I needed to involve people who genuinely cared and loved me in this decision. I had to be open to possibilities. Not my possibilities, but God's possibilities, which are two totally different things. I had to get to a place where things didn't matter. And I still struggle with that today in doing this, you know. What are people going to think? How are they going to respond? You know, how would I tell my family? What would my coworkers think? You know, would they think that I wasn't good enough and I couldn't hack it? It would have been much easier to suck it up and to move than to give back the job that I thought I was owed and then not know what was next. See, and I've been focusing on the whole physical relocation, but I ended up being relocated spiritually. And you can't imagine how freeing that felt to step out like that. I mean, as soon as it happened, people immediately saw. My friend said, man, there's something different about you. you look happier. My family saw it. My complexion cleared up. Neutrogena. But it was through this journey of trusting God that he brought me closer to him, my family, my friends, and then ultimately into a new position. But I had to seek wisdom, ask for the courage, and then ultimately trust in him in every situation. So I'm going to ask the band to come out now. And as they come out, just really, I'm going to ask you to take this time to ask yourself, you know, what is that fear that's holding you back? What is that virus? What is that fear that has seeped into your bloodstream? For some, it might be taking that first step to admit that you might drink too much, or you might gamble too much. For some, it might be pornography. For some, it might be infidelity. For some, it might be it's time for you to end that abusive relationship. A job choice. Breaking down that wall and getting vulnerable with a friend. Sometimes we just need to ask God to speak his wisdom to us. So as the band plays, just want to allow you this opportunity to really just ask God to identify that thing that's specific to you. There was one verse that I could sum up my whole experience in, and it's out of the book of Psalms. It says, I sought the Lord, he answered me, and he delivered me from all my fears. I don't know what your fear is, but I do know that God is there for us in our fears, and you don't have to live in it, and you don't have to be afraid. The question now becomes, what do you need to do now? You know, is it time for you to seek his wisdom? Is it time for you to act with courage? Or is it time for you to trust in him? God has made all those things, those antidotes available for us. Let's pray. Father, I just thank you for the opportunity just to share how you have moved in my life. And I just pray, God, that you would use these words, use this experience to help someone else. I thank you for your goodness. I thank you for your wisdom and your courage and how you always come through. It's these things in your son's name I pray. Amen. Good.